Introducing the Two-Way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the Two-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the Two-Way for yourself at NewBalance.com.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast, your audio source for all things Michigan football, basketball, and recruiting. I'm your host, Zach Shaw. Steve Lorenz here with me talking Michigan's 34-3 win over Nebraska. And we'll get ahead of this. There's going to be some room for critique in this episode, but we understand that Michigan won by 31 points. It is kind of funny that Michigan has totally entered that Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State mode where they'll win by 31 points. They'll more than double up their opponent's yardage, and fans will still be kind of like, ho-hum, or in some areas there's maybe even room for concern in this game. So it's not lost on us that Michigan is 10-0 for the first time since 2006, and only the third time in the last 48 years. I mean, since 1975, it's just 97, 2006, and this season. So plenty for Michigan and its fans to feel good about. But moving forward, we're kind of looking at Michigan in the scope of, will they win the Big Ten? Will they make the playoffs? And will they win the national title? Because I think all three things are on the table, but I also think Michigan, and I think Michigan would say this itself, probably still has some areas to either clean up or improve upon in order to pull off those goals. And Steve, I think the most prominent one is its passing game. The Wolverines, 10 for 20 passing, 148 yards. There were two touchdowns. I felt like the red zone passing and maybe even just the play design continued to improve. Last week, I thought there were some pretty good plays, and so you're starting to see the touchdowns pick up a little bit. But Steve, over the last three games, Michigan's completing 52% of its passes. It's averaging just over 6 yards per pass attempt. Its passer rating, and it meaning the team, because I don't know that it's all on JJ McCarthy, but his passer rating prior to the last three games was in the 160s, 170s. Since then, it's been the 120s Michigan's passer rating has. So definite drop off. And Steve, this was kind of the premise of my column that I posted this morning is, you know, Michigan is running the ball. They're run first. That's fine. They have that identity. They've used it really pretty much all of Jim Harbaugh's tenure, if you actually think about it. I mean, there's only 1 year where they ranked in the top 50 in passing yards per game under Jim Harbaugh, and it was the 2020 season. So really, they've always been run first, run heavy, and it's definitely working this season. But there's a big difference between being good at running and passing the ball and choosing to be run first and being run first because you don't have a pass game that can win you games. And I think for much of the season, I had kind of, when I saw Michigan's efficiency throwing the ball, I was always under the impression, okay, if they really need to pass, they can win. But Steve, there's plenty to unpack here, different things in the passing game that need to be improved. But if Illinois comes out next week and holds Michigan to 3 yards per carry, limits them to, I don't know, like 140 total rushing yards, I am not sitting here confident that Michigan will be able to throw its way to a lopsided victory. My impression is if a team shuts down, or not shuts down, slows down Michigan's rushing attack, it's going to be an absolute dogfight for the Wolverines. Even with their great defense, which we'll talk about later on in this episode, even with the run game, which seems like it's still trending toward winning some awards this fall, I think Michigan's pass game is in a slump, and I'm not sure 10 weeks into the season, because they've spent all year trying to be, you know, that's what they work on in practice. 10 weeks into the season, or 10 games into the season, I'm hesitant to say time is running out, but there's certainly a lot of pressure on Blake Corum and Michigan's run game to produce in every game the rest of the way, because I don't think it's a given that Michigan's pass game will be able to, like, say against Ohio State, win them a football game on the road in that kind of setting. Your thoughts on the pass game? I mean, 10 for 20, 148 yards. We knew that they weren't going to throw the ball like crazy against Nebraska, but that's lower than I think what anyone expected from a production standpoint.
Yeah, I think there's a few things here. So one, Michigan went, like, they were in situations last year where they needed to throw the football, and they were able to, right? You know, I remember coming out of the Washington game where Michigan ran it down their throats. A lot of the same sort of complaints. They're going to have to throw the ball. Well, they kind of did when they needed to last year. Even in the loss against Michigan State, I think McNamara threw for like 370-something yards or something. You know, Penn State, Nebraska, you know, games where Michigan did have to show a little bit more on the other side of the offensive game plan or whatever, and they were able to effectively. We haven't seen that yet. You know, I think the concern is, yeah, one thing is Michigan continues to win first down with their running game. And I think that's where they kind of build off of either continuing to run the football or whatever. I can't imagine there's not going to be a situation going forward for Michigan where they're going to play somebody, whether it's Ohio State, whether it's a team to match up with if they were to get into the playoffs, that is going to slow them down a little bit up front on first down in particular. And they're going to be in those second and eight, second and nines a little more consistently, where you're really almost forced to have to throw the football. So I think it's a situation where, you know, if they don't want to throw the football more or throw it 30 times a game, that's understandable. I think the issue is the last month or so, when they are trying to throw the football, it hasn't looked crisp and it hasn't been effective. To me, I think that's the bigger concern. You know, will teams start to load up the box even more? Why wouldn't you? Right? I mean, I guess if you're Illinois, and Illinois does have one of the top, statistically has one of the top pass defenses in the country. No, they haven't faced the Big Ten West is what it is. It's not a gauntlet of teams that are throwing the football all over the place. But actually, matter of fact, didn't they just loot Purdue's like the one team that kind of does, and they actually lost to Purdue yesterday. But, you know, I'm loading up and forcing Michigan to beat you with the pass. I mean, who was it? Was it Michigan State that did a lot of two deep for some reason, you know, and that I would not take that approach, you know? So that's, and then the other thing too is, and I don't want this to spiral off into a whole different conversation, but I think part of the frustration from a fan standpoint and just in general is I think the expectation was that the passing game would be more explosive with JJ McCarthy at the helm. And
yeah, because last year, and I'll read the stats in a moment, Michigan has fewer passing yards, fewer passing attempts than it did at this time last season. But it was always supposed to be Cade McNamara. Michigan was never going to explicitly say this, but like he was always supposed to be kind of like the game manager, the facilitator, allowing the run, keeping defenses honest so that the run game could be effective. This season, Jim Harbaugh compared it to like a pitcher having a great fastball and a great curveball in Big Ten media days. He said that the pass game will be even better this season. You know, he mentioned being able to be dynamic. Like it wasn't the same kind of preseason buildup where last year everyone knew it was going to be run first. They just didn't know how good it would be. This year, even Jim Harbaugh who doesn't always give that kind of stuff away in interviews, he was confident that the pass game would be as effective as the run game this season.
Why wouldn't you though, going into the season, they're supposed to be super deep at wide receiver. We talked about it being one of the deepest wide receiver rooms in the country, especially when you consider how well the freshmen looked, the early enrollee freshmen even looked in spring ball, the spring game, you know, and the thought was they probably wouldn't even need to rely on any of those guys this year. And they haven't, to be fair, but you know, supposed to be a strength of the team was the skill positions across the board. And we haven't really, that hasn't really come to fruition necessarily. So big question is, and I don't, you know, this would be more of a time to maybe promote, you know, Sam does a great job talking with Devin Gardner and Al Borges. They get the better film and stuff to watch. But like, I remember last year, there was a big situation where there were open receivers in the field and McNamara was not finding them, even when he was still putting up okay passing numbers. I'd be curious to know if that's still the case for them in the passing game. Because, like, the thing is, I can't fathom that Michigan's receivers all of a sudden don't know how to get open. I mean, these are guys that have had long, pretty fruitful and successful careers when you're talking about Johnson, Wilson, and Bell in particular. You know, is it schematics? You know, that's kind of the big question. But there just seems like there's been too much talent for them to not have a higher level of success when they're passing the ball, right? The question, like, I think we're in agreement. If Michigan doesn't want to throw the ball a ton, whatever, but it just hasn't looked good when they've been trying, when they've just been attempting to throw the ball lately. And I think, again, we're measuring Michigan as a potential national championship contender, not maybe what we would have talked about Michigan 3 or 4 years ago, you know, as fighting for 9-3, 10-2, and hopefully beating Ohio State at the end of the year. I mean, Michigan's 10-0. They should be 11-0 after next weekend. You know, this is a top five team. It's been a top five team the majority of the year. I think it's fair to, you know, you reach a little bit further to find some criticisms. Even when they're covering the, I believe they said it was the largest spread that Nebraska has ever faced in school history, which was just an insane stat when you consider.
I'm not surprised about the history. I'm surprised it hasn't come up in the last 2 years. I mean, they're six and 16 over the last two seasons.
Yep. And Michigan covers, right? In a game that people, it's like, yeah, it felt it. I said it was the most ho-hum 30.5-point cover in football history. And I still believe that because I mean, Michigan was in total control, but it was ho-hum is the best way to describe it. And that's, I think Michigan will take ho-hum any day of the week. But like I said, just trying to reach a little bit deeper to see where and what Michigan needs to unlock to get further than they did last year, if we're being honest. I mean, I think that's the goal, obviously. So what can they do?
Yeah, and I honestly went into yesterday believing it. My mind wasn't changed. I think Michigan's defense is better than last season. I think it's run game. Thinking about the whole apparatus, this is not a Hassan Haskins slight. Whole apparatus, offensive line, running backs. I think the run game is better than last season. But I think the pass game is maybe, I don't want to say it's going to hold Michigan back, because Steve, I think you kind of agree with me too. Like, I don't think we know to what degree Ohio State is going to stop Michigan's rushing attack. I think we assume it will be tougher sledding, but I don't think it's a given that Michigan goes into Columbus and like can't run the ball. And honestly, I don't think it's a given that would happen in a potential playoff situation either. But I do think as Michigan tries to chase titles, because now they're in ring chasing season right now. I mean, the floor at this point is probably the Rose Bowl. So now it's about trying to obtain titles, I guess, establish legacies. Because this team's going to be talked about for a long time, no matter what. But, you know, thinking about the two other teams that went 10-0 in the last 48 years for Michigan, 1997, 2006, I think those are both amazing football teams. One of them is talked about a lot differently than the other. And so I think it's going to come down to how they look in against the other top five teams that they play, whether it's just Ohio State, whether it's Ohio State and a playoff team, whatever it ends up being. And that's where you start to look at the passing stats and also just the passing game. You know, the stats aren't great, but I think everyone who watched Michigan yesterday, and I think everyone who watched Michigan against Rutgers, yeah, we could throw Michigan State into that mix too. The last three games, there's been countless missed opportunities. I don't think it's just on JJ McCarthy. I think the receivers are also at fault at times. I think everyone has to share some of the blame, but the efficiency has totally dropped off. And then, And then, Steve, I think the big one, I think the one that fans are kind of watching the most closely is the deep ball passing. Because at this point, J.J. McCarthy is now 11 for 34 on passes 20 or more yards downfield. There were a couple yesterday that were missed. Andrell Anthony, I think, I don't know if he lost track of the ball or didn't think the ball was coming to him. He stopped his route while the ball was in the air. And then on the very next play, that was the Cornelius Johnson drop pass. And this podcast is not going to be about picking on those two in particular. I think there's missed opportunities abound. I think it's abundant. And the stat that jumps out to me, borrowing Pro Football Focus's analytics, Michigan's wide receivers are 0 for 8 now on contested passes in the deep ball passing game. 0 for 8. Generally, good receivers are around 50-50 on contested catches. 0 for 8, that tells me that Michigan's receivers, for as experienced as they are and for as talented as they are not the kind of receivers that are going to come down with the Nico Collins type ball. Not just the jump balls, but also just the ones that are in traffic. That seems to be a weak point for this team. Can I throw something in
real quick? You talked about the deep passes, and like yesterday it felt like it was short or deep. Is it fair to say that my bigger concern almost is that it feels like the intermediate passing game has kind of disappeared over the last 2 or 3 weeks. Like, yes, because we've been harping on throwing the deep ball, hitting the deep ball, forcing defenses to respect it. It does kind of feel like that 15 to 20 yards downfield passing game has really been missing.
Does that feel like a Schoonmaker?
That's what I kind of wondered too. Is like, I'm wondering if they're missing Schoonmaker more than people maybe realize, and it doesn't have to just be, that's not just a tight end thing, obviously, but like, having a tight end in the middle there maybe draws things over, creates a little more room in the middle of the field for the receivers to make plays. Because yesterday, especially, it didn't really seem like there was anything attempted in that sort of sweet spot, in the middle of the field, especially. And I agree, he's got to be better on the deep ball. You could argue Cornelius Johnson should have caught the ball that was thrown his way. The other ones, though, still just seems like he kind of seems to be putting just a little bit too much on every one of them. I mean, that's kind of the other thing, too, is almost all those deep balls that are missed, the 23 misses out of 34, almost all of them seem to be deep and not short, So I don't know, that just feels like something that can be fixed. I don't know. Maybe not at this point. I don't know. But I thought just the lack of intermediate passing game really seemed to kind of stand out to me in the last couple of weeks in particular.
And by the way, I think part of why we're harping on this so much is you and I both feel like Michigan can be better in the passing game this season. Last season, it was a lot of like, this is who Michigan is. This is what they're going to do. I still think that's their identity, and they're entitled to that identity. But I think everyone is surprised that through 10 games, J.J. McCarthy has fewer passing yards than Cade McNamara did last season. And and J.J. McCarthy hasn't thrown, I believe, for 200 yards since that Indiana game, which I thought was a great game for him. But Indiana's defense continues to make that look less and less meaningful. So it's surprising. I don't think it's a deal breaker. J.J. McCarthy is a first-year starter. I think Michigan's receivers are being challenged in different ways than they used to be. I think the lack of presence of a tight end is, suddenly those deep balls, Nebraska, I would not say is a particularly great pass defense, but I do think they were in position on a lot of those plays. And maybe that's route design. I don't know. That's where the all-22 camera and being able to really break it down snap by snap has a lot of value. But yeah, it just feels like that's probably the missing link. And I think it's becoming a little bit of a concern, because if they don't have the deep ball, but they have everything else, I think Michigan can live with that. I think that's what you saw against the Iowas, Indianas, the Penn States. It was efficient passing game, high percentage passes. Didn't necessarily break a defense's back, but also was, they were completing more than 70% of their passes. Now it's not, you're not even getting that. Over the last 3 weeks, 52% completion rate. That's not something that opposing defenses are going to respect a ton. That said, I do think there's still a high potential for Michigan to turn it around. You know, and Blake Corum, he's not the only player to mention this, but he said it yesterday. You know, they feel like it's happening in practice. It's about carrying it from State Street to Main Street. I kind of believe them. Sometimes I roll my eyes when I hear, oh, it's working in practice. I actually do kind of believe this because otherwise they wouldn't be trying these deep balls. Think about the last 2 weeks. I mean, they could have won those games without attempting one deep pass. The reason that they're trying is that at some point in practice, Michigan was given the impression that can be a strength for Michigan's offense this season. And so that's why they keep trying it. That's why they feel like it's something they can keep working on. Time might be running short, right? Because Illinois, I early preview, I kind of suspect Michigan will beat Illinois, but it might not be as easily as a Rutgers or Nebraska. But then suddenly you're in the lion's den at Ohio State. And it's kind of a now or never. So I believe Michigan when they say it's working in practice. Otherwise, they wouldn't be calling them in the games. But that efficiency is starting to creep down where it is less Michigan loves to run the ball and more Michigan needs to run the ball. And I think Ohio State and other potential playoff teams, they would much rather face a Michigan team that feels like it needs to run the ball than one that can do both but is choosing to run the ball. Steve, that said, we're going to pivot to the stuff that we liked out of Michigan's offense real quick. It is just stunning to me how every single game, it's like clockwork with this run game. Michigan maybe starts a little slow. Like, I don't think they've busted out of the gates running the ball. But especially Blake Corum, especially that offensive line, it seems to get better as the game goes on. And they wear teams down. And I can't tell you how many times yesterday Nebraska had 8 in the box. You know, they only had one safety up high, and they were putting as many guys in to stop the run as they could against Blake Corum. And he had 28 carries. He only had one carry go for negative yards. So I sympathize. You know, Jim Harbaugh had the quote yesterday, hard to decide to pass when you're getting 5-6 yards per carry. And I agree with your point about the first downs. I mean, if it's 2nd and 5 and Blake Corum is getting yards every single time, I get the allure and the incentive to just keep running the ball. I mean, this is something special. Steve, you've been watching Michigan games a little bit longer than me. I mainly, you know, kind of thinking about those 2000s, 90s games. I mean, have you seen Michigan just able to bulldoze opponents like this? I mean, that's the only word I can think of is by the time the fourth quarter comes around, and this is not a slight on, you know, Michigan's backup running backs, but they're getting 10, 15 yards per pop. I mean, the offensive line is wearing teams down, and Blake Corum is just, I mean, he had 162 yards yesterday. He did not have a single carry go for more than 12 yards. Like, to me, that's someone who, I mean, that's a very Hassan Haskins-like stat line where it's not flashy. The other team knows it's coming, and yet he's still delivering. Just wanted to get some of your thoughts on the context of just what we're watching. I mean, I this is just impressive. As much as we can talk about the concerns about the passing game, I don't know if anyone's going to stop Michigan's run game. It's just a matter of, you know, can they slow it down here and there?
That's what I was going to say. I mean, honestly, kind of a little reminiscent of the national title team in 97, really. That was not a dynamic passing attack by any means. You know, that was a Chris Howard, A-Train, Chris Floyd, Steve Hutchinson, like the, you know, and playing, winning the turnover battle, you know, yeah, especially not turning it over, not so much forcing a ton of turnovers defensively, but not turning the ball over offensively, wearing teams down up front throughout the course of a four-quarter game. They don't have a Charles Woodson on defense, obviously, but I think Corum probably better than the backs they had for sure. But I mean, that's the first thing that springs to mind is that there are some similarities there you know, they were definitely a run first offensive unit with a very, very incredibly stingy run defense, depth up front. You know, like I said, the difference Woodson, which is a big difference, but still, you know, as far as just strictly offensively, I mean, there's really that. I mean, over the years, Michigan's had, they've definitely had games, individual game. I think of Chris Perry, you know, 51 carries against Michigan State, you know, in a grinded out type game. So Michigan, you know, it feels like that's always sort of been the backbone of Michigan football, but you know, at the same time, there have been plenty of years, you know, we've had a lot of great receiver play over the years as well. So, yeah, I mean, to me, the first thing that stands out is the national championship team as far as just the offensive makeup so far. I would argue it feels like the ceiling for Michigan's passing game should be higher, though, just because I think you do have a little bit more of a dynamic player at quarterback. And I think the receiver talent from top to bottom is a little bit better as well. I think the other thing that they in 97 was, you know, a guy like Tooman, you know, the tight end position also super, super valuable for Michigan, both in the running and passing game, which is goes back to, you know, we know Eric All's done, but you know, that think they need a 100% Luke Schoonmaker, I think, or a huge breakout from Colson Loveland, who continues to get more playing time every Saturday, but got to think Schoonmaker's the more safe bet there to be a, you know, sort of that blocker slash receiver at the tight end spot that can really tear open that seam and open some other things up.
Well, and it's clear JJ McCarthy likes throwing to him, right? That there's that trust there with Schoonmaker. Obviously Eric All is out for the season, probably maybe a loss that got overlooked a little bit. Like I remember when that was confirmed news, maybe because it was like rumored for so long, but yeah, it almost seemed like Michigan fans were like, oh, that's okay. You know, 8-0 or 7-0, you know, still cruising. But he was Michigan's number two player in receiving yards last season. So, you know, when we think about yesterday, yeah, if Schoonmaker or even Eric All are in that game and healthy, do the numbers at least look a little bit more favorable from an efficiency standpoint? But yeah, Schoonmaker's health is a big part of it. In terms of the run game, yeah, I was curious about the context because it does feel like very 90s where Michigan's first and second string running back seem like NFL future NFL draft picks. It seems like no matter who they're facing, I mean, the rushing numbers against Ohio State in the 90s were incredible. And you hear former Michigan offensive linemen talk about some of those games, and it's like they knew from the jump, oh yeah, we're gonna run for 300 yards today, is what they, you know, they would reflect on that. And so starting to feel like that, like when I think about the Michigan Ohio State game, because my column initially was going to be like Michigan needs to like get better at the passing game because someone's going to stop the run game. And I was like, well, I don't know if someone will. I don't think it's a given Ohio State will. And you know, one thing about Ohio State the last 2 weeks, Northwestern and Indiana, two of the worst rushing attacks in Power Five football. They average against teams that aren't Ohio State, they combine to average about 187 rushing yards per game combined. Against Ohio State in the last 2 weeks, the Buckeyes have surrendered 356 rushing yards. And I know they're going to be a lot more focused and a lot more determined to stop the run against Michigan than they were in games against Northwestern and Indiana. But I don't know that Ohio State has completely fixed its run defense issues from past seasons. And I, you know, when I head down to Columbus in a couple weeks, I will be doing so expecting Michigan to run the ball effectively. How effectively may determine ultimately who wins the game. But I am under the impression that Michigan will be able to move the football through the ground, probably against everyone that it faces. I mean, Georgia is maybe the one, if they end up facing Georgia, maybe the one team I think in the country that really can stop everything Michigan wants to do. But Illinois, great run defense. Ohio State, statistically, still a pretty sound run defense. So the next 2 weeks, it will be very interesting to see if some of this this grating physical run game that Michigan's having so much success with continues. With that, we're going to hit a quick break. On the other side, we're going to talk about defense, couple things, including this one debate. Steve and I both like this when we talked about it before the show. Who has been Michigan's biggest outlier on defense, a surprise player who has really helped Michigan perform better than expected on the defensive side of the ball? You're listening to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/RS10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/RS10 today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
All right, welcome back. Thanks for waiting. Steve, I think there's a few players, so I kind of want this to be almost the entire second half of the episode, because we'll talk about a few different players. But Michigan's defense continuing to look like, I would probably say, the number two defense in the country right now. I think Georgia's number one, really, until someone scores more on them or exploits them or shows weakness there. I think it's fair to keep them number one. But I think Michigan's number two. I think they're better in coverage than they were a season ago. I think they're much better stopping the run than they were a season ago. You know, the pass rush starting to grow a little concerned the last few weeks. It hasn't been as prolific as it was previously. But I don't think it's some liability that Michigan's going to be doomed by, you know, especially with how well they're playing in coverage. So, Steve, I'll let you get first crack. Who's a player that's the outlier term is something that John Beilein used to use. That used to be his thing. Is come February and March, you need outliers on your team to have success. You know, and outliers meaning players who are playing above what was expected of them, or what even Michigan expected of them, because obviously Michigan wants the best out of all of its players, but even the coaches have. They're not expecting every player to be an All-American or a superstar. So, Steve, who's someone that has really shined for the Wolverines, thinking mainly in Big Ten play, more than what was expected, that has really played a big key in Michigan's defense being as successful as it has this season?
Yeah, there's a few. I think we could almost think there's at least one at every level of the defense. I know the one that we talked about beforehand, Mike Sainristil. Really, I mean, you can't have enough, like, reliability is such an asset in the defensive backfield, you know, and for him to walk in as a primarily offensive player and come in and play as consistently as he has for Michigan, you know, it's like Turner's been a little up and down. Green's been really good when he's in there. Will Johnson is ascending. Sainer still's really almost been one of the steadier players back there, which is huge when you consider, well, the game in 2 weeks. And just again, just Michigan once again with their third different defensive coordinator are once again near the top of the country in a lot of passing defense statistics. So, you know, Sainer still's one. I think Michael Barrett, his ascension the last 3 or 4 weeks, you know, a guy that we, I think, I don't know how I would say it, maybe we liked but didn't love necessarily. Much credit to him because he's looked like a different player coming down the stretch, which is huge at linebacker because we had kind of nitpicked linebacker as sort of the weak link sort of on the defense, particularly from a depth standpoint too. So with Nakai Hill-Green being out, guessing for the whole season at this point, you know, for a guy like Barrett to step up has been huge for Michigan. So, and then up front would be, I mean, there's a few guys up front, but yeah, Mason Graham has just been, he plays like a veteran already. The future is incredibly bright for him. And again, another spot where, of course, depth everywhere is valued, but man, having interior depth on the interior of the defensive line is just, that's what can win you big football games, is always having one or two guys in the middle who are fresh, but effective. And hit, so him being able to play behind Mazi Smith, Chris Jenkins, you know, along with Rayshon Benny, even Kenneth Grant, who I don't know if he's going to get any big snaps in big games this year, but even yesterday coming in late looked like a guy that's going to be a force to be reckoned with at some point too. So, but yeah, so credit to Mason Graham as well as being another guy.
Yeah, I think Mason Graham is, I mean, especially yesterday, felt like he had a couple pretty big plays on maybe the one or two drives that Nebraska did something. You know, it's just, I don't mean it to sound like we're dunking on Nebraska, but they had 8 first downs in the game. They had 10 drives, 8 first downs. Really only 2 drives that I can recall off the top of my head that went into Michigan territory even. So pretty dominant effort, but I thought Graham was hitting pretty hard. Looks like he's getting better getting through the line, you know, in terms of his hand technique, some of the counter moves to, you know, the offensive line that he's facing. But to me, I think the biggest outlier is Mike Sainer still, because I think even the most optimistic Michigan fan would not have projected Mike Sainer still to play this well in year one at, you know, the nickel slot corner kind of role. I mean, Trey Palmer averages 95 receiving yards per game entering Saturday. He has held to 12 yards on 10 targets. And it wasn't all Sainer still, but it seemed like time and again, Sainer still was the guy that was there, that was on that play, that was covering Palmer. And we mentioned before the game, Palmer is kind of former top 120 recruit, former LSU player, transferred to Nebraska, has been a star there. Maybe a little bit of a preview to a matchup against an Ohio State receiver, for example. You know, very shifty, very fast, and very effective. Now, Nebraska didn't have its first, and then at some point, its second-string quarterback. But at the same time, I didn't feel like Palmer was, like, scampering wide open downfield. Like, it felt like he was pretty well covered. Didn't get a lot of yards after the catch, either. I mean, 12 total yards, you could probably surmise that he wasn't getting a ton after the catch. But I thought Sainer still continued to really just, I don't think in even Jim Harbaugh's dreams was Sainer still the guy who could replace Dax Hill so well. He's not Dax Hill. You know, the coverage stats aren't quite as good, but boy.
Does Mike Sainer still get drafted?
I think so. I'm not a scout, but I guess it would depend because he's
Dax
one of the
was
few
a first
recruits.
Round. Dax was a first round pick, so
he was.
We're not, and he's not Hill. You already made that clear. I just, has he worked himself into being drafted. And it'd be a fascinating case because as valuable as he was as a receiver, I'm not sure if he's getting drafted in the NFL as a receiver.
No, right? I don't think so.
Fascinating. It's a fascinating like development for him. Like, you know, I just think it's very interesting to think about with him.
Yeah, in terms of his draft potential, I think part of it is going to have to come down to how he tests, like what his testing numbers. Because I think he's one of the few players on Michigan's team that I couldn't find really any verifiable testing numbers on him. So, and that's probably why he was a three-star recruit, because right as soon as he got to campus, Michigan loved him. They love his football IQ. They love his athleticism. They love how he looks in practice in terms of not making mistakes, in terms of taking every snap seriously. So I think there's definitely a path to being drafted. I don't know enough to gauge that, but for the fact that that's even a conversation in his first year playing defense since high school, I think is really, really impressive. I think there's two other players in the secondary who have been outliers. And one of them is Makari Page. I feel like we've talked about him before. I mean, he really helps Michigan safety room out. RJ Moten, Rod Moore, I think are very good players. I think their size limits them. You know, I think Moore is just, he's very small for the safety position. And Moten, I don't know that he's quite, I don't know if he quite has the foot speed to keep up with. He's kind of like a Brad Hawkins type, or maybe even like a Josh Metellus type, actually, where he's not missing a lot of tackles and he's making a lot of smart plays, but I don't know if he's keeping up with every receiver that he lines up against. But Page, I mean, he's 6'4" and like what, 195 pounds. I mean, he has the length to cover a tight end, but also the foot speed to, I think, hang with at least a few slot receivers and running backs in coverage. So I think he's been a big help. But then the guy who is really starting to look like a true difference maker for Michigan, that even a month ago wasn't necessarily an expectation anyone fairly had on him this season, is Will Johnson. Because Steve, I'm going to pull up the numbers in just a moment, but I think he's been Michigan's best cornerback over the past few weeks. And that's saying something. I mean, DJ Turner is a guy we expect to be drafted. I think he's very good. Jamon Green is a guy you and I are constantly singing his praises. Feels like it's been a couple years now that we've been saying that he's underrated and that he's gonna have a pretty good fifth year senior season. But I don't know. Seems like Will Johnson is playing at this particular moment better than both of them. And I don't think that's anything to feel ashamed about. I think he's just playing that well. And I think if you're a Michigan fan and you're wondering, okay, what are the odds of beating Ohio State in Columbus? I think Will Johnson helps your odds quite a bit the way he's playing right now. Five-star recruit, was always expected to be really good at Michigan, but I think there's always hesitation about true freshman defensive backs. I mean, even Dax Hill had some big plays that he allowed his freshman year, and then it was kind of his sophomore in junior year where he really stepped up. But Johnson looking prodigal right now is that, I don't know, maybe that's too hyperbolic, but he looks like he might be Michigan's best cornerback and maybe best defensive back right now. And that's a very good sign for the Wolverines. Steve, your thoughts on Johnson?
Yeah, he's been awesome. I like the physicality he plays with too. You know, he played a lot of safety in high school, so he's used to coming up and laying the smack or whatever you want to say it to receivers or whoever backs, you know, but that physicality I think has been noticed, and not just the Sean Clifford hit a few weeks ago against Penn State. I mean, he's been playing like that for the last few weeks. Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, and still 2 weeks until the game, but I mean, if Michigan's run defense is maybe the best in the country, definitely one of the top two or three units in the country, and two of our ascending players, I mean, we've been watching the team closely all year. If two of our ascending players are your nickel and the guy who's supposed to be your third corner, you know, bodes kind of well heading into Columbus, doesn't it? I mean, at least to get the objective in a road game against a big team like Ohio State is to give yourself a shot. And it feels like Michigan is the pieces are sort of accumulating, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, for Michigan to at least slow down Ohio State enough to give their offense a legitimate chance to win the game. So, yeah, I mean, seeing Will Johnson ascend the way he has, yeah, not a huge surprise. I think I would almost say probably according to Michigan's plan, kind of, because, yeah, I mean, he's got two vets in front of him, so it's not like there was a rush. You know, there was no baptism by fire here with him. I think this was a steady progression, I think, that Michigan believed could happen and I think expected to sort of happen. So, yeah, I mean, he's going to be the guy for the next couple of years for sure. And, I think Michigan fans are fair to be very excited about what he's already become and what I think there's still a much higher ceiling there.
Yeah, his ceiling is All-American. You know, that'd be maybe an expectation heading into next season, but certainly his junior season. But the last five games, Steve, he has allowed five completions in coverage on 14 targets. He allowed that 48-yarder against Rutgers. Other than that play, he has only allowed 16 passing yards on the other 13 targets. He's really starting to look very good. I agree with you about the tackling. And, you know, he doesn't look, you know, he is an undersized. He's a big cornerback. That's why part of why he was a five-star recruit, 6'2", 194. But, yeah, he's hitting like a safety, yet playing in coverage like an elite cornerback. So that's been a real boost. Steve, anyone else jump out to you as an outlier? I did like the Michael Barrett one. I think he is him and Jermon Green are two fifth-year seniors who deserve a ton of credit because I don't think they were guaranteed starting jobs heading into their fifth seasons. And I do think they could have started somewhere else. You know, they were both recruited by, you know, the old defensive coaching staff in the shift. I think there was some concern. I mean, they weren't starters toward the end of last season. They were playing, but they weren't starters. And so I give them a lot of credit for seeing the vision of becoming starters and key pieces in this Michigan defense, and then also going out there in the offseason and making the improvements to get there. Anyone else jump out to you as an outlier on this defense? I mean, obviously, you're not going to be there. Michigan is number one in scoring defense, total defense right now. So you're not going to be statistically the best defense in the country 11 weeks into the college football season without a number of outliers. Anyone jump out to you? Maybe is there, you know, you mentioned Mason Graham, anyone else up on the defensive front that stands out to you?
That's why I wondered. I know you're going to do your snap count thing. I wondered about Derek Moore because it felt like he was out there a lot yesterday. Again, I don't know. Maybe I focus on single guys too much. Maybe he didn't play a ton. It felt like Derek Moore was out there a little bit for more snaps than he normally is, you know? So I think he's another guy, maybe not quite the same as Will Johnson, especially because there is a heavier rotation at that edge spot, but a guy I think Michigan had growing expectations for after they knew and realized what they had and, you know, has kind of been on a progressive rise. I don't think he's to the level of any of the other guys we've talked about. But I do, I mean, you know,
he could really help Michigan too if he starts to pick it up, because he went over a month without a quarterback pressure.
Okay. He had at least one yesterday.
He had two in three pass rushing snaps.
There you go.
Yep. He was effective when he was out there. He made the most of his snaps, in my opinion.
Yeah. Maybe that's why I thought he played more. Maybe he didn't have more snaps, but you felt him a little bit more than they have in the last few weeks. So, you know, yeah, definitely a guy that can really help him. That dude's just built like an NFL defensive end. I mean, to me, of all the guys they put out there on the edge, he's the one that just physically looks like a guy who would play in the pros. So, you know, maybe
he kind of looks like Rashawn Gary a little bit.
Yeah. Yep.
Just from a physical stature standpoint.
I agree. Yep. And so he'd kind of be the other one, I think, if there's anybody. But I think the Makari Page one's really good too. You know, we're really singing his praises early on this season. Now he's become just a reliable cog for Michigan defensively. Like I said, we love the way that he's a guy you can use in different defensive scenarios. I think that's where his value lies. So, you know, another good one to think about. But, yeah, that's a few guys in the defensive backfield who have really sort of stepped up, you know, and are playing their best football right now.
Yeah, I think one other player, and I'll shout him out because I did mention in my pre-game story that he had his production had kind of fallen off lately, but Yabby Oki, I thought, had a very importantly good game yesterday. He had three quarterback pressures. He hadn't had one in a month. Like, I mean, he had the same drought that Derek Moore did, but with a lot more snaps. And so I don't know how much that will translate against better offensive lines. I mean, Nebraska's not a very good pass blocking team, but I thought, you know, Oki is someone who I don't know what was a fair expectation before the season. I mean, it seemed like everyone who covered Michigan, including our site, were kind of like, not sure that this is going to be, this isn't a guarantee, right? It's like a big experiment to add someone midway through fall camp with extreme talent, but also hasn't played a Power 5 game or even an FBS game in several years, doesn't know Michigan's playbook, you know, very much a wild card. But I think he's been really helpful, just adding a little bit more of an athletic punch opposite Mike Morris, because Mike Morris has been great. You could argue he's been an outlier. I mean, there were high expectations for him, but, you know, for him to look kind of like a second team All Big Ten defensive end, I think is a very good sign for Michigan. But I think across from him, having a little bit of explosiveness, especially in the pass rush, I think Oki's been very helpful there. Steve, switching just to kind of the general takeaways from Michigan's defense yesterday, anything else that we haven't talked about yet jump out to you about Michigan's defense? Hard to sing the praises as much as previous games, even though the stats are great, just because of how banged up Nebraska is. But at the same time, I think Nebraska converted a 30-yard pass on its first drive, and the rest of the game, they had less than 110 yards in the other nine drives. I mean, they had several three and outs, eight total first downs, very much a domination, but probably, I mean, you can talk about the injuries, but it was important to me, I think, that Michigan really didn't have like a dink around drive where the consistency fell off, or they were making, I guess the field goal drive, they had a couple penalties, but overall, you know, I think Michigan, for a lot of times, they'll play really great games. This is not specific to this season. This is more under Jim Harbaugh. But then they'll have like a drive or two where they just, I don't know if they're caught with their shoelaces tied or what, but it does seem like they give up a fluke touchdown here or there. I thought it was impressive to me in November to see them not have that kind of drive. You know, when you're thinking about Ohio State in a couple weeks, you know, that's the kind of consistency you need. It will be a lot tougher against the Buckeyes, but I think great defenses really don't give you anything over the course of 60 minutes. And Michigan's starting to look like one of those kind of defenses.
Yeah, that's pretty much my takeaway. You know, Nebraska's offense, pretty poo at this point of the year, but that doesn't mean, yeah, you're always susceptible to hiccups, particularly when you know the offense you're facing. You know, it's a team that you should have a lot of success against. So yeah, the no hiccups and stuff, I think, is important to note. I mean, yeah, what more can you take out of a game like that? Because like you said, I mean, we expected Michigan's defense to have a high level of success throughout this game, but they went out and executed that. I mean, when you have one play, that really is like, that's it. One play, we're talking about single plays here, and that was it. Is you know. Yeah, did what they're supposed to do, which in November, that's what you want to see if you're Michigan's coaches, I assume. You want to see them go out and do what they're supposed to do against an inferior unit. And again, that doesn't mean, you know, if they didn't go out with it, didn't do what they were supposed to do, it means like Michigan, the game was probably almost never going to be in danger here. But even just, yeah, a couple lapses, a couple drives, sustained drives, you know, no, I just, Michigan came in and did their job. And yeah.
That was the only play Michigan allowed all game of more than 13 yards. And it was what, the third or fourth play of the game?
Think about that. Like, that's, I don't care, you know, it's still a Power 5 offense. Like, that's impressive, you know, and that's, those are the types of stats you can take to the bank no matter who you're playing against, maybe unless it's like Iowa. I don't know. But yeah, no, that's crazy.
Yeah. Yep, under 150 total yards, 8 first downs. I mean, Michigan is really starting to. I think the first down stat is quietly maybe the underrated stat about this Michigan defense. Is like, I believe they lead the country in fewest first downs allowed now. I mean, they're starting to not even let teams get comfortable. You know, I think about Michigan State, I think Rutgers, I think Penn State. You know, I know they scored on that one, you know, where they had Clifford ran for that really long run, but every other drive in that game, they were uncomfortable. And I, you know, Penn State and Rutgers each scored 17 points, but they needed special teams and defensive touchdowns to get there. I mean, Michigan's actual defense has not allowed more than 10 points since those garbage time touchdowns that Iowa and Maryland got. And that's it all season. So I think they're really doing a nice job with that consistency where, you know, even if they give up, I think Purdy had a couple scrambles that Michigan was out of position for. But even if they give up like that 30-yard kind of fluke pass, the very next snap, they're not reeling. They're not taking mental lapses or having difficulty focusing. I mean, it's just a very focused defense. And they're pretty talented too, right? They're similar to Michigan's offensive line. They're wearing teams down by the fourth quarter, especially feels like in the pass rush and stop. And then the run game, like no one gets to do anything. Anthony Grant entered last week 22nd nationally in rushing yards per game, 22 yards on 11 carries. So, and that's been true for Rutgers, for Michigan State, for Penn State. Penn State had some pretty good running backs, and they actually ran the ball decently against Ohio State, against Maryland, to, you know, maybe a different type of defense, but couldn't do anything against the Wolverines. Anyway, for Steve Lorenz, I'm Zach Shaw. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast. Lots of stories over at the MichiganInsider.com, Michigan.247sports.com. Be sure to check it out. Wolverines are 10-0 for the first time since 2006, and only the third time since 1974. So, enjoyable season if you're a Michigan fan. Don't overlook, you know, just the raw record. I know they haven't played quite as many good teams as they're used to playing at this point in the season, but those opportunities will come in the next 2 weeks. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast. We'll see you next time.
From producers Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, explore how art and music sustained hope during the siege of Sarajevo, thanks in part to humanitarians and the band U2. Kiss the Future, new documentary now streaming exclusively on Paramount+. Go to Paramount+ to try it free. Terms apply.